You've tuned in to a special edition of the Roundtable Podcast, Going on a Pilgrimage with Matthew Wayne Selznick. Hello, literary alchemists. I'm Dave Robison.
And I'm Brian Humphrey.
And you're listening to, well, something special,
Yes. Actually.
This is going to be something like a 20 Minutes With showcase with, as you've heard so many times on the Roundtable, where we invite talented, creative people onto the show to discuss their mojo, their creative vibe, their process. But in this particular case, it's coming out of sequence because there's something special in the works, right, Brian?
Yeah, something that we're very excited about, and we want to make sure that everybody hears about it as soon as possible.
And we'll talk about that almost immediately.
Yes.
But let's introduce our guest host.
Sure.
For this particular showcase event. Brian, our guest host for this event is... he's a creator with a capital C.
Ooh.
Yes. You know, you can call him a musician, and that's absolutely true because he creates marvelous music. You could call him an author. He has written several tomes, not the least of which is Brave Men Run, which we'll be talking more about later. He's a social media mage. He's a podcaster. He's a world builder. He is all of these things and so much more. And we've actually jumped out of our regular schedule to make room for him in our feed because he's got some awesome news that we wanted to share with you and make you guys aware of. So without further ado or gilding the lily, let us invite Matthew Wayne Selznick to the big chair at the round table. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Dave, Brian, it is a pleasure and an honor. You had me... kind of cracking up over here on the sidelines, trying not to laugh too loud with that introduction.
Am I overselling?
Gilding the lily. Wow. I love it.
Yeah, that's kind of my stock in trade. I gild lilies for a living. So, Matt, you've got a wealth of material, content of a variety of formats and media behind you, and you're sort of blazing a trail for yourself anyway in terms of your next project. Tell us what's going on so we can get on to the questions and answers section.
Well, sure. Basically, I guess the primary reason I'm here is because I've got a Kickstarter campaign running for a new novel in my Sovereign era story world. For the benefit of your listeners who don't know who the heck I am, and wouldn't be surprised if there were more than a few of those folks, 7 years ago or so, I released a book called Brave Men Run, a novel of the Sovereign era. It was the first, I believe, the first novel-length work of fiction to have a simultaneous initial release as a paperback, several different DRM-free ebook formats, and it was one of the first two dozen or so so-called podcast novels. And there have been some other short stories and an anthology released in that universe, but there hasn't been another novel until now. I'm getting ready, gearing up to do, you could call it a follow-up to Brave Men Run, called Pilgrimage. It's a standalone book that is also a sequel, in the true tradition of the comic books that it is inspired by. There's a lot of exposition woven into Pilgrimage, so that folks who have not read Brave Men Run won't be left in the lurch. Not going to quite do a splash page flashback, but or the novel equivalent of that. But so yeah, I started a Kickstarter campaign about a week ago, and it ends at the end of August. August 27th, I believe, is the very last day.
And how much are you hoping to gather with this Kickstarter campaign?
I'm hoping to fund the professional edit, professional cover art, the page layout, and the initial distribution costs. And so the Kickstarter goal is $5,000, of which I'll probably receive $3,700 and change after everybody takes their cut.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, which is fine.
Yep. Got to render unto Caesar, as it were.
Oh, sure, sure. Got to pay Kickstarter for their great service and Amazon for handling the payments and the tax man at the end of the year.
Oh, my, yes. So, Matthew, tell us a little bit, just give us a brief overview of what is Brave Men Run about? What is the superhero vibe that's going on in there so that our listeners can get a feel for the type of universe you're crafting here?
Absolutely. Brave Men Run is the story of Nate Charters. He is, we could call him a misfit, both physically and socially. He's a sophomore in 1985, a sophomore in high school. And all his life he has known he is different. He looks different. He has some natural abilities that definitely set him apart and might make him, you know, really something special if his self-esteem wasn't kind of damaged by, you know, just being different, but not so different as to be spectacular, you know? Okay. He's a kid who really just wants to figure out who and what he is and just, you know, get along in the social soup that is high school in the mid-80s. And one April day, he, along with the rest of the world, is astonished by the announcement that metahumans, people with remarkable physical and mental abilities, exist, and they are coming out. The most powerful of these metahumans has, in fact, declared that he and others like him are sovereign. They want to be treated as if they were not part of the laws or under the influence of any government in the world, separate but equal, if you will.
Well, I'm sure that goes over real well with the world powers.
It goes over horribly. It's 1985. It's the peak of the Cold War. This was the era of mutually assured destruction. It was not a fun time. lots of pressure and tension in the world, and to have this matchstick added to the bucket of gasoline. So there's a lot going on sort of on the world stage, but Brave Men Run focuses on this kid who suddenly has to ask himself, hey, is this what I am? Am I part of this powerful new minority? So it's that. It's the story of Nate Charters figuring out and discovering who he is. It's also sort of a love letter to the 80s and to the sort of the high school of that era and to comic books of the Bronze Age. Again, it's a prose novel, but the careful reader will find lots of tributes and sly asides that relate to 70s and 80s era comics. I had to have some fun with that.
That's fabulous. Now, where does Pilgrimage pick up, and how does it expand on the story that you established in Brave Men Run?
Well, the Sovereign Era, if I can kind of expand that question a little
bit. Sure, sure.
The Sovereign Era cycle overall deals with, you know, how the presence of metahumans changes the world and indeed human destiny from, you know, in, let's say, the last 20 years of the 20th century. And all of the stories in the cycle, whether it's short stories or novels or what have you, deal with that larger sort of socio-political issue, but also always focusing on, you know, what, like all good fiction, I hope, what is the human experience?
The smaller story within the larger one.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pilgrimage picks up a year after the events of Brave Men Run. And it does feature Nate Charters as one of the central characters, and he is definitely probably the tentpole arc in the book. But we're getting much more detail on the larger Sovereign Era and things that are developing there. This book, Pilgrimage, like Brave Men Run before it, is definitely small stage storytelling. You know, we're focusing on people who aren't too different from me and you, but it starts to hint at a more widescreen sequence of events that will come in later novels.
Okay.
So it's kind of a transition book, I guess you would say. It's
implying that there will be more to come.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Oh, excellent.
there's probably five novels to tell the Sovereign Era story.
Oh, wow. You have a major arc in mind.
Oh, yeah. And the Sovereign Era is just part of that arc.
Very cool. Very cool.
I'm a universe builder, baby.
Yes. Yes, you are. This is great.
I just think this is such a cool idea. And I'm so new to the Kickstarter idea. But I really love the concept that people who maybe really got into the whole Nate Charters character now can kind of have a little bit of influence on it continuing on. To play kind of devil's advocate, what happens if not enough money is raised?
Well, here's the deal, and this gets back to the question of why I'm doing the Kickstarter approach. To begin with,
sure.
I, in one form or another, I make my living through my creativity, whether it's helping others with their own creative endeavors or you know, figuring out which project of mine I want to do next. Because creating stuff is directly related to paying the rent, I have to prioritize where are the resources of time and energy and money going to go. What's going to have the most, for want of a better word, lucrative return? Sure. What's going to be the best investment? I would love to write more in the Sovereign Era universe, but I can't do it without this sort of guarantee.
An affirmation from the crowd.
Well, not just right. An affirmation from the crowd, but a reduction of my risk.
Oh, well, yeah, there's that too. Gotcha.
Yeah, but there's definitely something golden in finding that your fan base is large enough to kind of help this thing float.
Absolutely. And I kind of did my due diligence on this a few months ago. I surveyed all the folks in my mailing list and, you know, just my Facebook and Twitter audience and anybody I could reach who is interested in my creative endeavors or Brave Men Run or what have you. And I asked them, hey, among other questions, I asked, would you be interested in supporting a crowdfunding campaign for a new Sovereign Era book, especially one that featured Nate Charters? And I did that just to be sure, because years of anecdotal evidence and people saying, hey, we want a sequel, let's really make sure.
Let's quantify right. that bad yeah. boy. Let's absolutely.
Exactly. So the overwhelming majority of the people who responded to the survey said, yes, please do. And so I took a couple of months to plan it out and figure out what it was going to cost and what kind of perks and rewards I could offer folks. And here we are. It's great for creativity to be the kind of thing that you just do for the love. and I do love it. I mean, sure. I can't not make things. I've been... Right. A creator in one form or another since the mid 80s, since I was a kid. I'm going to make things one way or the other, whether or not I make this particular thing. I have to get pragmatic about.
Sure.
Definitely. So.
Well, let me ask you, Matt, friends, if you go out to Amazon, you type in Matthew Wayne Selznick, you'll see a veritable cornucopia of awesomeness. listed under there, and among that list of coolness is Sovereign Era Year One, which is a collection of tales, an anthology, as Matt was referring to earlier, set in this era, but not by Matthew Wayne Selznick. The names that appear in this collection of stories are names like Merle Lafferty, J.C. Hutchins, P.G. Holyfield, J.R. Blackwell, Nathan Lowell, some serious heavy hitters. In the podcast fiction and general fiction markets. And I wanted to ask you, Matt, what is it, do you think, about Brave Men Run and the universe that you've crafted there that drew these individuals into your world and motivated them to put in the time and the creative effort to expand on that universe so beautifully with their stories?
You hit on it right there, the Expand on the Universe so beautifully with their stories. I love what I got from those guys. It was a gift in many ways. Now, to give you a little backstory on that, the way the Sovereign Era Year One came about, Brave Man Run was self-published in 2005. Mm-hmm. And in 2008, I was approached by a small press to ask if they could do a new paperback edition as one of two flagship books for a new imprint that they were launching. We went back and forth, and I decided, okay, yeah, why not, you know? So in order to promote the reissue of the paperback edition of Brave Men Run, which was in July of 2008, I did a webathon where, you know, I don't know if you remember how it used to be kind of the big thing to do an Amazon rush.
Oh, yes. Yeah, everybody buy my book on August 15th, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So I did a live streaming webcast for 8 hours on the day of the launch.
Wow.
Where dude,
you and Jerry Lewis, man.
Exactly. Yeah. It was a webathon, and we did it through Ustream, so it had the integrated chat room there. And basically the idea was, okay, every hour we're going to check the Amazon rankings, and to fill up the time between those hours, I'm going to read a brand new short story set in the Sovereign Era universe written by some of the most popular indie and podcast fiction writers of that time.
That's cool.
How did I get those guys to contribute those stories? I asked. They're my friends. I asked them to do it. You know, the deal was that, hey, you guys, this is going to be, your stories are going to be considered canon. These are official Sovereign Era tales, part of the universe. Right now it's for the love. We'll see if we can sell it later on. And so that's how that came about. And so, yeah, later on I did collect it in an anthology, and those guys are
yeah, but they could have said no. I mean, sure. Mer Lafferty's a busy woman. Nathan Lowell's right, got a lot going. All these guys are happening. So,
well,
you know,
keep in mind, this was 4 years ago.
Okay, yeah. Good point. Good point. But there must have been something that they saw in the story that you created that inspired them. What do you think that was?
I believe that, I mean, let's face it, there's been a lot of superpowered people in the real world books and media.
Sure.
You know, everything from Wild Cards in the 80s to, you know, Astro City in the comics, Watchmen, you know, Heroes and whatever that found footage movie was. From,
oh, Chronicle. Oh, that was gorgeous. That
was it? Okay, good. That was fabulous. I haven't made it to it yet. But
oh, make that scene. But go ahead.
But yeah, so, but to me, the most important thing about these stories is that it's not about people with superpowers. It's about people. It's always got to be about people. And perhaps that's at the core of this. You know, we should mention, we've called it superhero fiction or whatever. There's nobody running around wearing their underwear outside of their tights in the Sovereign Era. It's not that kind of thing. It's more of an alternate history. In fact, in the world of the Sovereign Era, in that story world, in the United States, there was an important diversion or forking from our own timeline. You know, in the 50s, comics were almost banned and wiped out completely. By a sort of a morals campaign right around the time of the Red Scare.
Right.
Well, in the Sovereign Era, they were. Comics pretty much disappeared in the United States. So there isn't that comic book culture in this universe. So, you know, people with amazing powers don't know they're supposed to put on a cape and a diamond mask.
Right, you know, right. They don't have the set pieces to follow. Yeah.
They're just trying to get along and figure out how to survive and figure out what it all means. Again, to focus on the humanity rather than the special effects, if you will, even the Sovereign themselves there are a limited number of them in the world, and the great majority of them are not like, you know, Superman or Thor level characters.
Right.
Great majority of them are more like your Daredevil or your Spider-Man, or, you know, they're not right. in terms of power level. The number of people who, you know, what's your sovereign ability? Oh, well, I fold awesome origami, you know.
I make plants grow really well.
Yeah, yeah. They hugely outnumber the people who can, you know, leap over tall buildings with a single bound.
Okay.
So
one of the things that we talked about, I don't know if it was actually while we were recording or not, but one of the really cool things about you, Matt, is that, you know, you're not, we talked about your podcasting and how it's been a little while, but it's because you have so many other things going on. And so one of the questions that we like to kind of throw around has to do with, what is it that you're working on right now, or how is it that you're, you know, what are you doing to kind of hone your craft? And I'm going to kind of spin it a little bit and ask you, what, how much time do you really spend in any one given, you know, creative media? And do you hit it really hard for a certain amount of time and then feel the need to kind of shift into something else? Or is it just whatever kind of strikes your fancy? What is your working mojo?
Well, that's an interesting question. Interesting because it's difficult to answer.
That's our stock in trade, big guy.
No, that's good. That's good. I can't just, you know, I can't just say, oh, 20 minutes a day on this. And no, yeah, it's not like that. I mean, a day in the life, for me is, you know, again, we get back to that practical thing. I'm a fun employed freelancer. So, you know, first thing I do every day is check in with clients, or look for new clients. Second thing I do every day is work on client stuff. And in between the cracks, maybe I'm working on an outline or a story bible for something. Maybe I'm putting the finishing touches on a website project. Right now, to be specific, I've got a few things going on. I mean, here's hoping that this pilgrimage campaign, this Kickstarter campaign, will work out amazingly, and I'll be spending most of my time in September writing this book. Right now, there's a couple of things. I'm putting together a webzine called Story Worlds Magazine that sort of expands on my love of the idea of the story world, of the created universe, regardless of the genre. I mean, you know, the West Wing is a story world as much as, you know, the 52 universe of DC. So that's hopefully going to be a short fiction market for authors who have existing established story worlds and want to you know, write a standalone short story that might serve as an introduction for people or expand on something.
Excellent.
So that's out there at storyworldsmagazine.com, and that's, you know, currently gathering submissions for the first couple issues. So I'm tinkering with that right now. I'm tinkering with the possibility of, and this is sort of a scoop for you guys for what it's worth.
Yeah. We love scoops.
Well, I mean, it's a scoop that might turn out to not have any ice cream in it. We'll see. but, you know, I belong to a lot of forums and groups that focus on or circle around the idea of how independent authors can market their work and how best to do that and how to do it while still, you know, holding on to your integrity and not insulting your audience, etc. And I have to admit, I'm getting to that, holy crap, I could do this better, which maybe that's arrogance, I'm not sure. I have been a professional community manager, online community manager in my day, so it's difficult to see other people doing it or not doing it.
Right.
So I'm putting together a little website that isn't part of another platform's ecosystem. You know, so many of these groups now are part of LinkedIn or part of Facebook or what have you.
Right.
So tinkering with that and tinkering with, you know, a short story here or there. And I guess I do kind of bounce from one thing to another. the important thing to me, the thing that sort of keeps me sane is, am I making something? You know, am I spending part of my day making something that's for me? Got to keep an eye on the bank account, but it's important. It's always important to nourish, you know, what you need as well. And, over the last few decades, I've discovered that if I don't do that, I get nasty. So,
and nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
Least of all me.
Yeah. You know, when I was in college, I went to school for theater directing. And one of the things that my teachers always told me was, if you want to be a good director, don't learn how to direct, learn everything else.
Oh yeah.
And so that's kind of what I'm seeing with this. Do you feel like being so multifaceted that all of these other things sort of influence each other, and that makes you better at each one because you're doing all of the other ones?
I think yes. It struck me, you know, what you just said there, because one of my I would say most often used tools when it comes to becoming a better writer, for example, is watching creatives in other media talk about how they do their art. I'm a huge fan of Inside the Actor's Studio, for example. And that's, you know, they're not talking about writing at all, but what they are talking about is more often than not, it's about creating and how somebody arrives at the position in their life where they're able to create. And I think there's a very thin line between what actors do and what writers do.
It's storytelling.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. And musicians do the same thing.
Indeed, know. Indeed.
God, even coders, dare I say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, so, I mean, it comes down to me. I mean, these are all, everything you take in, you should be learning something from it. I mean, yes, you want to just purely enjoy something, but after you've been making stuff and storytelling for a while, it's impossible to kind of separate the critical eye, the learning eye, from just the, oh yeah, let's get my popcorn and sit down and just get lost.
Sure.
When something can do that to me by now, well, that's great. That means they've done a really amazing job. And my instinct when it's over is, wow, I can't wait to watch that again. Now that I've experienced it, or, you know, watch it, read it, what have you.
Can't so wait you can to deconstruct it and break it down and figure it out.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, cool.
Matt, what do you consider your greatest asset or your strongest skill as in terms of storytelling? Because everything that you do ultimately, I think, comes down to storytelling, whether it's building a song, building a website, you know, obviously writing a book. What do you think is your greatest skill, and how have you cultivated that over time?
I think if I really had to sort of crystallize it down to one word that I can then expand upon in some of those different areas that you mentioned, it's empathy. I feel that you can't be a good storyteller if you can't feel outside of your own experience. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean, you know, let's narrow it down to writing fiction. You know, this ties into what I just said about writers being actors. I was actually discussing this with some other writers. The idea that each of your characters is a role you have to play while you're writing that character. And some people in this conversation were saying, when I'm done with a really powerful scene, I'm exhausted. And that's because you're feeling, you know, you're going through a multiple personality disorder experience on the page.
Feeling all sides of the argument or conflict or whatever.
Every single scene has to have conflict. And you've got to be on all sides of that conflict, and you've got to believe and feel all sides of that conflict. I think cultivating the ability to this is, I'm going to take a risk here and say that you can't have that level of empathy, or at least you can't be open to that level of empathy and that ability to mentally put yourself into somebody else's shoes until you've had a little bit of life, until you've lived for a while and had some extreme experiences, whether they're, let's face it, any kind of extreme experience should be emotional.
Sure, absolutely.
And the trick is, I think the key is to be able to tap into that and extrapolate from that. You know, if you need to write a serial killer, all right, well, maybe you've never had the urge to go and kill people at random to satisfy some dark urge, but you've probably, if you really allow yourself to believe it and think about it, you probably have had murderous thoughts.
Sure.
You're a human being.
Yeah.
Yep. True that.
You know? So that's, I mean, I think that's, you know, I said empathy was, you know, sort of the core of it all. And being able to tap into that, to, you know, that people say that they're the best bad guys don't think they're bad guys. And, you know,
yep. Brian says that all the time.
That's right.
Yes, Brian.
Rule number one. Yep.
Because they're all people. Everybody's a person. And, you know, their motivations might be comparatively twisted and far, far, far from the norm. But they're their motivations. And the other thing is, and I've come to this lately in terms of my time on the planet and the time making things. The other thing I think is that it's important to put the story first. I don't buy it when people say, oh, my characters got away from me. Well, they didn't really. You're just telling the story that you wanted to tell. But, you know, everything serves the story. There is no argument between what's more important, character or plot. They're the same thing.
Yeah.
And recognizing that and allowing that to be sort of the lighthouse, you know, the beacon that guides you. I'm getting a little off the track of the question, but I think those are those two realizations, those two pieces of awareness are probably the most important thing. And by serving the story, of course, that leads into the third thing that is equally important. You're serving the reader in that instance, or in a larger sense, the user, the consumer.
Sure. And that's a whole different discussion right there.
The role focus that on audience and yeah.
But let's turn things back on the Kickstarter just a little bit, because this of course is where we put to the test all of these wonderful aspects of your creative mojo. You've actually developed a very healthy set of wonderful incentives, and you've even made it easy for people that don't necessarily know Brave Men Run to get caught up, haven't you?
Yes, I have. If you go to the Kickstarter campaign page, and I've made that easy on folks too, simply go to crowdfundpilgrimage.info, and that will redirect you right to the dedicated page on Kickstarter, so you don't have to remember this 30-character URL.
Or friends, you'll just be able to click the link in the liner notes. But
hey, that's right,
absolutely.
Yeah. If you read the entire Kickstarter profile page, you'll come down to the bottom where it says "Haven't read Brave Men Run? No problem." In exchange for your email address, I will send you a free ebook copy of the first book of the Sovereign Era, Brave Men Run, in either EPUB or Mobi format, so you can read it pretty much on any device. In exchange for that, you're saying to me, yeah, go ahead and bug me about this Kickstarter campaign, and I will do that. Now, this offer to get a free copy of Brave Men Run, and it's only through this Kickstarter link, and it's only until the first 15 days of the campaign are happening, so... we're about, how many days are we? We're about a week in now.
Yeah,
we have 22 days to go. So,
and not doing too bad.
Not doing too bad. No. Right. So this is a way to you'll get the book. I'll give you, a week or so to read it, and then I'm going to be emailing you and saying, hey, so what about it? What do you think? Is it worth $10, $25, $50, $100 on this Kickstarter campaign? Time's a wasting.
That's right. That's right. And a small price to pay for an exceptional story. An exceptional story.
Thank you. Thanks.
So, and let's talk about that story for just a little bit. You'd mentioned earlier about the many instances of stories where with superheroes in the real world, the Watchmen, the Chronicle, what have you. And there has been, I mean, just looking at the movies, looking at the media attention on comic books, on the superhero archetype. It seems like in the last, you know, I would say 5 years that our culture has really not only become aware on a very different level than it used to of the superhero thing, but also glommed onto it and really not fixated on it, but embraced it as a really truly viable medium where it's not just comics anymore. Now it's graphic novels. Now it's a legitimate form of storytelling. Why do you think that revalidation of the superhero as a legitimate literary protagonist has come about?
I don't think that's the case.
Oh, okay. By all means.
I'm afraid I don't agree with your premise.
Riff on, dude.
I think that if you look at popular culture, going back to the era of the pulps in the 20s and 30s and 40s, the quote-unquote superhero has always been with us and has always been popular. The biggest form of storytelling in the first half of the century, of the 20th century, was radio. And radio was dominated by the Lone Ranger, by Superman, by the Shadow, the Spider, by Doc Savage. Those are all superheroes.
Sure.
I'm not sure, you know, it's funny because it's like if you have somebody, you know, Joe on the street or the dude in the office that you talk to at the water cooler and at the Christmas party and never anywhere else, and he mentions, oh, yeah, I went and saw that Avengers movie, and you'd be like, oh, are you into superheroes? No, but it was a cool movie. You know, people aren't thinking of this as, now I'm into superheroes, no more than they're thinking, now I like science fiction when they go see, I don't know, Prometheus or something. It's just entertainment to folks. And you know, I would think, you know, the same person who listened to The Shadow also listened to Fibber McGee and Molly and also listened to The Jack Benny Show. And they weren't thinking, oh, I really love pulp action heroes. No, it was just entertainment.
Well, yeah, now, but back in, you know, go back to the 1990s. I mean, you could not release a superhero. Well, I mean, they did.
How many Batman movies were there?
Yeah, okay, all right.
and TV shows that, you know, we forget. Man from Atlantis, superhero story.
Yeah.
And the 90s, I didn't watch a whole lot of TV in the 90s, so I'm a little hard-pressed, but I think there was, it was a number, it was on basic cable, the 4400, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah, on USA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my point is that, you know, I think in the movies, superheroes are, you know, they've achieved blockbuster status, but I think that has as much to do with the technology catching up to the unlimited technology that the comic book page has, if you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
And the money behind it and the star power. So I don't think I necessarily agree that this is a sudden, amazing new thing. I mean, really, if you want to think about it, in this era where, let's say, you know, half or better of the summer blockbusters are superhero properties or comic book properties, the comic book itself is doing worse than maybe ever.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
It's not translating. This is not people into comics now. This is people who like movies where things go bang.
yeah.
And you know, there's a really interesting I don't know what to call it, but I was listening to the to talk radio the other day, and one of the commentators was talking about how, you know, there's all these movies being made for people who should have outgrown these characters 30 years ago, and it's this ignorance that these characters can only be enjoyed by 14-year-olds. And so I think that kind of plays into what you were saying a little bit, that I think you're absolutely right, that the vast majority of people have not necessarily glommed onto the superhero as a legitimate character, but more just, this is an exciting movie. It's, you know, it's being shown in a very sort of blockbuster manner, and I'm entertained, but I'm still going to hold my long-lived prejudice against comic book characters because those are for children, right? Almost.
Well, I think part of that is NPR looking for a story, and it's not just them that does.
Sure.
It's sure. Their job. You know, we have to put we have to challenge this somehow so that it's a story. They're right. Looking for conflict in every scene just as much as the novelist.
Sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But I mean, it would take a more media savvy mind than mine to really dig into this, but I will say this, and this offends people when I bring it up sometimes.
Oh, good.
But I'm not the first person to say this by far. You know, you could ask a certain shaggy gentleman from England by the name of Alan Moore, and he would nod his giant head in agreement. Superhero stories are about fascism.
Really?
At their core, the superhero archetype is about fascism. It's about turning your power over to someone that you depend on to take care of everything. And it's about people who use their power to take things into their own hands and control the situation, whether it's controlling crime in Hell's Kitchen or the entire world, like, you know, Adrian Veidt. Now, is that a bad thing? You know, you raise the specter of fascism. No, it just is. And maybe the reason that that superheroes are all over the theater, the movie theater these days, is, you know, we live in a world, arguably, where the average Joe, whether you're, you know, no matter where you are on the planet, is feeling a little out of control, whether that's because of the rush of technology or the economic climate. I'm not one to say. I think the zombie phenomenon has its roots in the same thing. There is with zombies, it's an unstoppable, unexplained force that is taking over everything.
Right.
Sure.
But it's that feeling. It's sort of the flip side. The zombie thing is about the you know, things are out of control. We don't know why, and we don't know what to do. The superhero side is, things are out of control, and by gum, we're going to do something about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or Superman will do something about it.
Right.
Interesting. That's an intriguing perspective on things, and it makes sense. It makes sense.
Well, and that's what Watchmen is about.
Right. Right.
Right.
Very much so.
That's entirely what Watchmen is about. And nobody, well, not nobody, but many people, they're just not tuned in to understand what Moore was trying to do with that.
Sure. Or apply that level of discernment and critical analysis of, why did I enjoy this story so much? Because it taps into something that you're resonating with, whether you're conscious of it or not.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Well, Matthew, this has been enlightening and intriguing, and I'm going to do this live right here on the podcast. Would you be interested, sir, in coming back as a guest host on a full-on roundtable podcast where you can help us workshop a story idea from offered up by a writer? Would that be something you'd be down with?
Oh, yeah. It sounds like a blast.
Fabulous. We will handle the details on that. As we wrap things up, Matt, any last things that you need our listeners to know or want them to know about the Pilgrimage Kickstarter campaign?
There are, well, as we're talking right now, there are 22 days to go. I am, some 42% of the way there. It's a low goal. I'm not assuming, just because it's a low goal and I'm halfway there almost, that it's going to succeed. So if folks are at all interested in what we've been talking about, please do go to crowdfundpilgrimage.info. Watch the video, read up on it, get your free copy of Brave Men Run if you'd like, and support this campaign. I would love to tell a new Sovereign Era novel, tell that story, and keep this cycle going.
That's right, absolutely.
But I depend on your audience and the audience to do that. If you want to find out more about me, of course, other projects, my creative services that I provide, all of that, I'm sure the link will be in the show notes. You can just go to mattselznick.com. And everything that you'd want to know that, and every way to get a hold of me is there. It's the big hub.
And I can affirm it works. It actually works. I got a hold of Matt through his website, and it works. Very cool. Well, and you've got extension goals, too. I mean, you know, let's say in the next, you know, 5 days you hit your mark. There's more to come if from supporting this Kickstarter, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Do you want me to go through those?
Yeah, real quick. Sure. Yeah.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So the goal is $5,000, like I mentioned. If we go a grand over that, I will do a podcast version of Pilgrimage.
Bam.
That will be available for free.
Awesome.
If we go $2,000 over that, I'll record and produce an unabridged audiobook version. And everybody who pledges in the Kickstarter campaign will get half off the price of the download for that.
Cool.
If we double the goal, $5,000 over the $5,000, there will be a new revised expanded edition of Brave Men Run, a novel of the Sovereign Era in paperback and ebook with a brand new cover. As it stands right now, the paperback edition of Brave Men Run is officially out of print.
Ooh.
So this would be a way to see it back in paperback. And again, expanded and revised, brand new cover and all that. And again, supporters of the Kickstarter campaign will get personalized autographed copies at half off.
Outstanding.
That's if we hit 10,000.
Yeah, let's do it.
If we hit 15.
Yes.
There'll be a new anthology of Sovereign Era short stories, The Sovereign Era International, which will be just like it sounds. The Sovereign phenomenon is not restricted to the United States. I want to see some stories about how the rest of the world is dealing with this. Similarly, if we go $15,000 over the goal, $20,000 total, I'll do an unabridged audiobook version of The Sovereign Era International. If we go 20,000 over the goal, there will be, I will commit to, a third Sovereign Era novel in 2013, Paramount, which will be the origin of the self-proclaimed leader of the Sovereign. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that so far the Sovereign Era stories have been kind of small screen, kind of Smallville. This will be a widescreen book.
Epic scope.
Cool. Big Jetson. So
outstanding.
Yeah, so there we go. Those are called stretch goals, apparently. Yep. I found that out last week.
And that's what we're going for. That's what we're going
Absolutely.
For. And friends, obviously from this discussion you've gleaned, if you're not familiar with Matt Selznick, you've gotten a good sense of him through this dialogue. He is a man dedicated to the creation, to the storytelling vibe. And not just for the telling of the story, but for telling of good stories, for telling of true, authentic tales that are relevant, that are highly entertaining, and leave you feeling like you've accomplished something. There are books that you read and like, oh, that was nice. And then there's books that you read and go, wow. And that's the type of stuff that's coming out of Selznick's brain here. On top of that, above and beyond that, I know a lot of you are, if you're digging the podcasting vibe, you're rebels, you're brown coats, you're out there on the fringe taking in the new media, and you support that independence, that spirit that sort of blazes these new trails. Matthew Wayne Selznick is a trailblazer, and you can cast your vote for that spirit, that vibe. So very, very clearly by supporting projects like Matt's. So the Roundtable Podcast comes out in heartily endorses the Pilgrimage Kickstarter campaign, and we will be throwing in our cash into the hat to put our money where our mouth is so that this thing happens. We hope you will too. Matthew, thank you so much, man, for making the time and sharing so much and helping helping educate me, if nothing else, on the fascism of comics, which I didn't know about. So that was very cool.
Again, thank you guys so much. And Dave, I feel like we should have thrown out the phone number to call and pledge after your amazing endorsement.
Yep.
You know, we'll throw in a tote bag.
There you go. Exactly. the Sovereign Era tote bag, which has meta powers. Yes. Awesome.
It's a bag of holding, right?
That's right. Well, friends, all of the links that were referenced during this podcast will be in the liner notes. Do check them out. Click those links. Support the project and demonstrate your power and your mojo by supporting a very cool project. Friends, stay tuned. In just a couple of days, we're going to continue the roundtable rotation. Now at this point, we're going to sign off, and I'm going to nail Matt Selznick down to when we're going to have him on the roundtable podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Brian,
yes.
Closing thoughts, opinions, what do you think?
Yeah, well, just one thing that I want to throw out there is I really love the idea of being in control of where my money goes when it goes to the arts and being able to see what comes from that. And this is, it's a really cool thing.
Yeah,
so go out and do it.
Well, and if experience has taught us anything, it's the Kickstarter campaigns. Yes, they're about meeting their goal, but it's also about
being a part of something.
Yes. It's about being a part of something. It's about, as you said, Brian, committing yourself, your resources to the things that you want to see more of in the world.
Right, exactly.
And when a goal is hit and then exceeded, all that does is send a very clear message that we want more of this.
Absolutely.
So by all means. Yeah. Friends, thank you so much for tuning into this special edition of The Roundtable. As I said, in a couple days, we'll pick up the regular feed. But until then, Brian, should they be doing anything?
Yeah, they should show their support and go pledge, and then go right.
Go right, and look for awesomeness, because you find what you're looking for. So, friends, thanks so much. Until we hook up again, you guys be cool. We will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode is copyright 2012 by the Roundtable Podcast and released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-alike license. Don't sell it. Share it all you want. And you can even use portions of it in your own projects. Just release those projects under the same licensing terms. We'd like to thank Matt Selznick for sharing his time and thoughts so generously. We'll return to our regular cycle of showcases and workshops in a couple days. Until then, as always, thanks for listening.